let's see here. We're going to change gears just a titch and see if we can't talk about a few different topics here. Antibiotic resistance, use some resistance, I should say. Certainly something that we get a lot of different kinds of public attention to, both in human medicine, but also in how use in animals might affect human health, and also how it affects animal health. And with me here, back again. You did time earlier in the week, and you got to come back again.
Yeah.
Make sure Greg Hibbing is with the College of Veterinary Medicine, like I said, he's been here before. One of the things, I guess, where I tend to start as I look at this issue, Greg, we have all kinds of competing agendas out there in terms of, you know, animal use to begin with, certainly animal medicine. We've got the whole issue related to antibiotic use in humans, overuse, underuse, and the big driver, whether it's the ultimate reason people are raising the issue or not, but it certainly is the one they discuss, and that is the business of getting resistance to some of the tools that we have in our toolbox, some of these antibiotics, right, that are then not effective in the longer run. And maybe what I should start with is, how real a concern is this, number one, getting resistance to the antibiotics on the part of who or what's being treated? And then number two, let's drag that over, can resistance being built up in critters that we might eat or use be transferred into humans?
Sure. So it's a concern, and like we talked about on Tuesday, antibiotics are definitely important for livestock production, and livestock producers have an obligation to use antibiotics, especially for sick animals, for treatment.
Sure.
But it's also the obligation for producers to use those judiciously in a way that minimizes the risk of transmission of resistant bacteria from animals to people. So, and the second part of your question was, how does resistance in livestock get to people, right?
Is that a real concern, I guess, is the question, because that's the one that I'm not sure the public understands what the interaction is or isn't.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a public concern. Is it a real concern?
Yeah.
So, I think the overall question is, how much of the resistant infections in people are attributable to antibiotic use in livestock?
Right.
Undoubtedly, that the answer is a small proportion. But what the actual proportion is, I don't think anybody really has a good handle on that. Right.
But scientifically, we know it can happen, so that needs to be at least it's not crying wolf when it gets talked about.
Yeah. So there's very specific instances where we can scientifically show that antibiotic use in agriculture may have contributed to some proportion of the infections, the resistant infections in people. But by and large, that proportion is relatively small.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I mentioned on Tuesday, one of the things is I deal with consumers from all kinds of different consumer perspectives. One of the things that certainly here in our survey research or in our interviews or whatever, you know, why the heck are you using these antibiotics in animals anyway? If I'm going to eat it, that's a risk to me. So get it out of those critters. And you know, sometimes it gets a little hard to explain this to consumers that have no livestock or even, you know, farm background or of any kind. How do we explain that better than we have?
Well, I think, you know, I think the public's perception of antibiotic use is one thing, and then the reality is another thing. And the public's perception of antibiotic use right now, what they've heard a lot about is the use of antibiotics for growth promotion to improve weight gain. That's essentially going away with the new FDA regulations. And what's left is therapeutic use, for the treatment, the prevention, or the control of diseases. So I think if the message from agriculture is that we're using antibiotics to make our animals healthier, to treat sick animals, to prevent animals from getting sick, or to control disease that's out in the population, I think that then the public may appreciate that a little bit more.
Yeah, the message that has gone out from those who are either against antibiotic use or against animal use has been, you know, behavior that we've done away with on the majority, you know, 10 years ago, maybe in this subtherapeutic use or growth promoting use. We just don't see that out there anymore, very much anyway, and it's going to go completely away as I understand the new guidelines that are coming. We need to talk a little bit about that. I was talking with Dixie and Demetria yesterday, and we have an FDA edict. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'd call it an edict. They asked the drug sponsors or drug manufacturers to voluntarily remove the label, the labeled indication for growth promotion or weight gain from antibiotics. So some of those antibiotics still have a label for prevention and control.
Okay.
But they will no longer be marketed or sold with that labeled indication for growth promotion or for weight gain, production purposes.
And haven't do I remember correctly that they've also changed it where the veterinarian must be involved in the prescribing of these antibiotics at all times now?
Right. So if the antibiotics are delivered in the feed or the water, then the veterinarian will have to be involved through a veterinary, what's called a veterinary feed directive.
Right.
Right now, so veterinarians aren't in control of all antibiotics, but if it's going to be delivered through the feed or the water, then the veterinarian will have to be involved.
And that's not a plot by you veterinarians to get more calls?
Absolutely, it is. Yeah, that's what we're talking to the FDA regularly to.
I knew those guys in the vet tent were dangerous. Hey, that even made Mo smile. That's pretty good.
He's the only one, though.
I'll get even with him later. All right. Actually, one of the things I hadn't asked you so far, when we talk about the kinds of antibiotics that tend to be our most concern,
sure.
Some of these folks, well, I'm guessing that most of these folks would know them if we said the names. They're the kinds of things that I want my doctor to prescribe to me when I've got a problem with whatever.
Right,
so,
yes.
Examples?
So there's, I mean, kind of like we talked about the other day, there's lots of different types of antibiotics. Some of them are used in agriculture, and of those that are used in agriculture, some are really not a concern for the risk of inducing transmission and an impact on human health. For instance, ionophores like rumensin, it's not an antibiotic that's important for human health. There's other antibiotics where there's really big overlap between those that are used to treat ill livestock and those that are used to treat ill people. And the World Health Organization, the FDA, tend to refer those as critically important antimicrobials. So there's a couple examples like, say, fluoroquinolones. So Baytril would be an example.
Okay.
Third-generation cephalosporins. Ceftiofur or Exenel would be an example. So those are commonly used to treat livestock diseases. They're also commonly used to treat diseases in people. So from the risk of administration in livestock, so those are the ones that we want to be more careful about. Not to say we don't want to use them, because sometimes we need to. We just want to be more judicious with those antibiotics.
Well, and I think part of this then becomes the discussion that we have more often, I think, today than certainly we did 40, 50 years ago, and that is the need for the integration of health management, risk management programs with on our farms, with our critters, and that really becomes a partnership between the veterinarian and the not just the farmer, but all the folks that are working with those critters.
Yes, I could not agree more. So if you're working to reduce the need for antibiotics, the best way to do that is through prevention of disease in livestock. So, and whatever management plans or prevention plans you have in place, making sure that those are effective, I think, is absolutely the best way to make sure that we don't need those antibiotics as much as we want.
Yeah. So if the kid comes home from school with a cold, don't send them out to work in the hog barn. Now, if it happens too many times, they're faking, right?
We're doing a study right now looking at that exact question. And
I like this guy. He'll go along with the ornery stuff. Anyway, let's see if we have some questions from the folks that are here in the audience related to antibiotic use and resistance. I guess kind of the bottom, I didn't see it, but kind of as we wrap up here, I want to go back. You know, we've established that this is a problem. And I guess the question I would ask you is whether or not it's a problem that deserves as much uproar as it has gotten. And, you know, it's not a fair question to you, Greg, but, hey, I'm not a fair guy sometimes.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, does it deserve the attention that it's gotten? I know what my answer is. What about you?
Yeah, so the literature as far as scientific literature, as far as to what extent antibiotic use in livestock impacts human health is really mixed, right?
Right.
There's a lot of instances where they don't show an impact.
Right.
And there's a lot of happens between the farm and between the consumer's plate.
Right.
In terms of, you know, what happens on the slaughter floor and hygiene and cooking that really reduce the transmission of resistant bacteria in livestock to people. So I think in general that it's not as there's not as big of an impact as what's been portrayed.
Right.
In a lot of instances. Nonetheless, the public perception is what it is, and I think industry has to respond to that.
Yeah, I guess my reaction is twofold. One is perception is reality from the standpoint of the consumer, so we have to deal with that whether we like it or not.
Agreed.
Number two, and you hinted at it earlier too, you know, we want to be judicious in using these things at the animal level. Forget about the human consumption portion of it. We want them to be highly effective with the critter and not, you know, cut back its effectiveness, what's the word I'm trying to say there.
Yes.
And if, you know, we prescribe this or put it in too often, that's what the risk is. And same thing with taking your kid to the doctor and getting too many antibiotics too often.
We want to make sure that we have the tools in our toolbox,
right,
and that we preserve those and that those antibiotics are going to remain effective in the future for the treatment of livestock diseases. So there's a potential human health impact, which is mostly what we've been talking about. There's a potential animal health impact in that we induce resistance on farms and those resistant bacteria cause infections, and we no longer have those antibiotics available for future use.
All right. Well, you guys over in the vet world have a tough job, and we do appreciate you coming out here to the review to help us deal with these, frankly, a lot of the issues that I have to play with when I'm dealing with consumers. You know, start with your science. So we need to keep it up here. We'll keep it going. And thanks for being a good sport, Greg. Two times this week, Greg Habing from the College of Veterinary Medicine, I guess we're calling it.